Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome to another hour of Tribal Wisdom. I am your host, Cynthia Williamston, and happy Wedding Wednesday. As always, we'd like to wish everyone a happy Wedding Wednesday, and we are grateful that you are able to join us for this month. We are celebrating Men of Leadership. This is our first show for the month of June, and we've got tons of wonderful shows coming up for you for the rest of the month, focusing on the topic of Men of Leadership, what leadership is, and so many other things. Tonight, we'll be talking with Michael Alissa-Meka. He is a photographer, healthy lifestyle coach, and spoken word artist. He's going to be coming to us tonight talking about leadership qualities as well as leadership qualities in health. So please welcome him. I hope you enjoy what he has to say. I know that you will. I don't even have to hope about it. And we're going to go right on into it. Michael, welcome to Tribal Wisdom. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's good to hear you, Cynthia. Thank you so much. I'm really humbled by this. This is exciting.
Wonderful. Why don't you tell us who you are, where you're from, and what it is that you do, even though I kind of introduced you already. Why don't you tell us what it is that you do?
Well, my name is Michael Olusemeka. The last name is from the Igbo people in Nigeria. I'm many things. I concentrate primarily as a dedicated and professional wedding family photographer under the business name of Simeka, which is actually part of my last name. At the same time, I'm also an innovative poet. I like to take stories and philosophies and creatively explain them, teaching lessons of morality. And as you mentioned, I'm also a healthy lifestyle coach. A pretty enthusiastic healthy lifestyle coach. So I really like to educate people about the ways we can understand, prevent, and reverse lifestyle diseases. Some of the most common ones I usually talk to people, but it's through different styles such as one-on-one consultations. Other times I do seminars and sometimes even cooking schools for different groups, small groups. It could be churches. It could be different people in different communities. But the goal is just the educational part of us understanding how our bodies work and ways we can really take charge of our health for the better.
Yes. And I look forward to really discussing that with you. We're going to be talking about that at the second half of our show today. But for the first half of our show, since this month is Father's Day, the month that Father's Day is in, and our theme this month is Men of Leadership, we want to touch on that subject. I know that you have some pretty interesting views on leadership, what it is, and I cannot wait for you to share that with us. So why don't we jump right into it with, you know, why don't you just talk about what leadership is first to you?
To me. Mm-hmm. This whole concept of leadership, I love definitions. This is my own thing because I believe words mean things and we have to understand the core of what we're saying to people if we're talking about something such as leadership. And I like the fact that you're focusing on this theme because I believe everybody is essentially a leader. Because the whole idea about leaders, we see these people in positions or offices of influence. So we believe they have a power to, you know, affect perspectives of people, and we believe that wherever they are, they're just involved in other people's lives. They can change people's mindset or change people's paradigms and motivate people and just inspire them to do things they probably wouldn't normally do by themselves. And the funny part about it is that when people think about this concept of leadership, we usually pick individuals that are the, I guess what we would call the positive leaders, the great leaders of that we ascribe these positive traits to, whether great public speaking, or they have enforced some kind of good in our world. You know, like you have the Buddhas and the Jesus, and you have the Martin Luther King, you have the Nelson Mandelas. But if it just has to do with having a position of influence, we have to also realize that, yeah, there's even the Osama bin Ladens. There's also Adolf Hitler. There's Jim Jones. Jim Jones was that was a religious figure from the 1970s. He got a whole bunch of people in Guyana to commit suicide. And if that's not influence, I don't know what is. That's exerting power over people. He was able to motivate them to do something, but we wouldn't call that good. But the fundamentals is what I'm concerned of when it comes to leadership. You know, Vladimir Putin or Joseph Stalin. These people are men, and of course they're women as well, who are in positions that they can change people's perspective and they can affect other people and get them to do pretty much what they're thinking is right. So when it comes to leadership, I simply say it's a position where we understand our responsibility. We understand our responsibility that we can affect other people, and our actions in this reality are received in some way by people, which can change the way they think and ultimately change the way they act. It's a science. It's a science where we really have to sculpt minds, but it at least has to do mainly with it has to do with some other person. There has to be at least another person in the picture for it to be officially called something like leadership.
Right, in order to be able to say that you influence them and therefore you become a leader to them.
Yes, hence the whole concept of follower. That every leader has a follower, at least one.
Right. Since this is the month that we are honoring and celebrating men of leadership, I really want to touch on the topics of men in leadership. And, you know, everyone has a different idea of what that could be, what kind of leadership roles men should play, whether it be at work, whether it be in family. Let's talk about the journey of becoming a leader when it comes to men, the male perspective of becoming a leader. What is that journey about, essentially? What is that about?
Wow. It's special. It's special. Just especially as a man, at one point I wasn't a man, so the journey is it's challenging because there are different factors involved, and of course we'll be talking about all of them, but for me there's socioeconomic factors that have to be in play. There's my background that has to be in play because different cultures expect different things from young men. I was part of the culture that expected the young man to understand his role as a family member and a future family member. So from my cultural background, I was educated more on, I am preparing myself, even as a boy, I am being prepared to be a person who is going to have a family of my own in which I serve as the head, meaning I am the representative of this family. And I take the lead when it comes to maybe our financial decisions or just relocation or what we're going to do. I seem to be the general here, the one who goes in front at life. So that was the perspective that I've come to understand, and which I believe makes sense for me. And different views on the whole thing, but what it looks like, especially for me living in the United States, I could definitely see how there's such a clash because of this issue of equality, and you know we can do this, and what's wrong with women doing this? What's wrong with us matching exactly what you're doing? And what I do like, what I found, it's so effective because even as a young man, what I usually do is. My lady friends, I have discussions with them on just what roles we should do and what roles they like, I always ask them, listen, if I'm a guy, if I'm a man, and I decide I want to lead you, I want to be a representative for you, and I want you to assist me and be a guide for me and be a support for me, and I'll take care of you. And this does not mean I'm the only breadwinner here, but it means I want to protect you. I want to serve as a security for you. I want to serve as someone who can influence and motivate you to do better as you're doing the same for me. But let me take the brunt of everything. Let me go first ahead of you when it comes to that. I just want you to trust in me to guide you. Usually I do not find any conflict with that. So for me, I really love that understanding of it. And it's just built into me to want to be that kind of person. And, of course, these are things that are perpetuated by society about the male taking the lead and winning the heart and all that, that stuff we see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it is instilled into us. We do have that there. The only problem is that, well, one, what we see on TV is typically not what we see in reality. And the other side of it, there are also men who abuse what I believe is a beautiful thing for a man just to pursue someone. Or for him to pursue something that he really desires. If it's not just a person, it's a business venture, it's some passion he has, and it's the aggression that's put into him, which is, speaking biologically, that man has an aggression that's put into him. I mean, anyone that has seen an animal castrated, they know that they become extremely docile after. So there's a passion that's put into man to go after what he wants. So I believe that exercising that and trying to navigate through that world in my life, I had many, many bad experiences trying to navigate. Unfavorable experiences, but those are part of the learning process. Some of which I know we're going to probably talk about a little later, as it comes to fatherhood and everything. And
right. We will definitely touch on leadership as in a correlation to the office of fatherhood. Right now we're sticking to the office of manhood and leadership. And what you mentioned I find very interesting is your very first definition of leadership had more to do with influence as a leader by itself. But when combined with the office of manhood, now we're talking about something different. We're talking about adding the elements of passion and the element of what a lot of people say, you become more of a servant. I've heard people say, when you are a leader, you are here to serve. You're not necessarily here to dominate or to dictate. You become a servant. So when you're talking about manhood and then relationship, let's talk about the elements of passion, being a servant. And I think we, at one point in a previous conversation, talked about gaining trust.
Yeah, we definitely did. We definitely did. It actually links away to what I spoke of before, just about the aggression that's in us. That is a very, very, very powerful element to a man. In fact, I was reading. I just finished reading a book, which was it was by Napoleon Hill called "Think and Grow Rich," in which he had a chapter solely based on the issue of sexuality and men, where he mentioned that if you try to examine most men and their success, you will usually find that there is a woman involved in this whole picture. If there's not a woman already directly there, which is probably his spouse or probably a woman in his family, there's a prospect of a woman because of that natural drive that he has, which we as men, when we take that drive, that natural fire that's in us for aggression and in us and to express our sexuality, but we channel that or transmute that into our business. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's that's the best word I can find, because it shows that we do have that aggression, and that has to continue to fuel this whole thing. Because after a while, when the desire goes, it's common to see the discipline goes away as well. I mean, many people that they could do great things, but they just don't have the desire to do it. They're too overwhelmed by something else that they're doing, which has nothing to do with what's really burning in them to do.
So you mentioned two things. You mentioned desire and aggression as a fuel to leadership.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure, is that what you're saying, that it does take a certain level of desire and a certain level of aggression in order to become or get pushed into some sort of leadership?
Well, leadership will be there because we all have influence over something, someone. Usually we have influence over someone. But But to continue that, if we want to continue to improve ourselves as leaders, the strongest thing I've seen is that desire that's there. I believe it will continue to make you more of a successful leader. If you're sticking to more of the positive light of saying, I want to promote positive change, maybe around in my family or in my community or in my church or something like that, then the desire has to continue to be there. That's what I'm really saying. The desire is what really serves as a source of it. But there's other things that are involved in the whole process. But I found the desire has to be there, and we have to find ways that we can continue to nurture that desire. Because in the face of opposition, sometimes the desire can just go out. But it's not saying that we're going based on feeling, but there's a desire that dwells in us that we have a thing we want to do, whether it's that business or whether it's some kind of mission, some kind of plan we want to see come to pass. That desire, I'm saying, has to be there, and that is the passion.
Okay. So we're definitely saying that influence and desire are major components of leadership and becoming a leader and making sure that there is a way to transform that in a positive way is one of the most important things and to make sure that we're pushing that in the right direction is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
Okay, so then why don't we go ahead and just open that up, the conversation of the importance of current leadership to future leadership. Because if desire and influence is a few of the elements, then that means that we have to be watching our current leadership, whether that be your current boss, your mom, your dad, whoever is in the position of leadership at the time. How is it in your description, how does that affect future leadership, current leadership to future leadership?
I remember we talked a little bit about this, and for me there's so many dynamics to it because the different avenues we have is like the one you mentioned. There's a part where we have to go from the perspective of we're looking at a person or persons who have influence over us, whether positive or negative, and we have to be cognizant of what they're doing and how it's affecting us. Most importantly, because however that's affecting us, it can determine. If we're not careful, it can determine what we will become. That's one perspective of it. The other one is it's very introspective because when it comes to me as a leader, someone who has influence over people, someone who tries to motivate people, I look at my own current state and I look at that and I see, what am I doing? How am I affecting people? What am I saying to people? Is what I'm saying even credible? Is it something that I've backed up with documented evidence, or is it something I just want to share my opinion? Am I open for scrutiny? Am I open for accountability? Am I open just to have people check me on what I'm saying? And however I'm operating now, the habits that I have now, will determine what I will become as well. So I like to look at it from those avenues because I know that for myself, I have to look at it from of what am I doing in my current state of leadership? And if I keep this up, what exactly am I going to become? And then, of course, they're looking outward and saying, the people that are influencing me, people that are around me, if they continue to have influence over others, what will those other people become if they're not aware that they're being molded to be like them? Because I think leadership, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but what I'm seeing this whole thing about influence, it looks like we're getting people to think like we are.
Mm-hmm.
If it makes sense. When we want to do something, when we want to motivate someone to do something, if someone at your job is trying to get a team to see something and try to finish an assignment, we're trying to get someone to think like us.
Mm-hmm.
We may not be acting like me, but I at least want you to see my perspective. But if my perspective is skewed, if my perspective is just off, then whoever I'm trying to mold to be like me, I mean, they really will be like me. So I think that the importance of it is paramount because I have to, for myself, I have to consistently scrutinize what I'm doing and allow myself to be scrutinized by others to know that I am not, if I'm going to be creating more people like me or fashioning more people who think like me, I should have the right perspective myself before I'm educating others on that.
I love it because what you're basically talking about, the new element that you're speaking about now, you mentioned accountability, which is major when it comes to leadership. Something you said a little while ago, you said leadership is being actively engaged in knowing your responsibility in a situation. And I found that very profound because not many people really hear leaders talking about them being accountable for something. So when you mentioned being accountable, I thought about that you're actively engaged, that you have to really be active, actively thinking about the choices that you're making when you are influencing other people's lives.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You're absolutely correct. Yeah. And, I mean, even where I am in my journey, I am, you know, right now, I think it's because you're moving into the public sphere. Me, 5 years ago, maybe not so much. I had influence on my family members, had influence on my friends. But now trying to put myself out there and get people to think like I do, I get emails, I get calls, I get texts, and the scrutiny is incredible. And while there is discernment in there, we'll talk a little bit about that, but this idea that we really improve ourselves, and we like to do that. I mean, we look around in our reality. We love improvement, whether it's your cell phone. I mean, unless you're usually not using the same cell phone as you had 10 years ago. We like to improve things around us, but in order for things to improve, we need examination. And if we're examining ourselves, it looks nice. You know, but there's an old proverb that says every man's way is right in his own eyes. But if you get another perspective on that, you can find out things that you weren't looking at the time. And I love that, even though it's really uncomfortable. But if we do that everywhere else, if something's wrong with my car, I have to get it checked out. I need another perspective. If I need to go to the dentist, I got to get somebody else's perspective on the issue, and I have to listen to them. And if it makes sense, yes, even if the consequences are unfavorable, I have to allow myself to just be scrutinized by these people because I want to improve. And I think that's one of the most admirable qualities of leadership is the fact that you're willing to let people say, you know, you were wrong. What you just said in that interview on Block Talk Radio with Cynthia, that was wrong. And then they give you some documented evidence about that, Michael. And if I look at it and it makes sense, I say, you know what, you are right, and I thank you so much for being a part of making me better, because that's all you just did. So the people that actually are trying to scrutinize you, sometimes if I find out they're right, I say, thank you, you just made me better. Now I can use this and upgrade my information. But especially with the accountability side, at least I've found out that we really have to get to the point where we are actively engaged in being honest, especially when we don't know something. And that could be in parenthood, it could be as a leader for an organization, or just in just anything in your family, your friends. But when I don't know something, I have the duty to say I don't know, but I will try to know. You know, like there's an African proverb that says, you know, the wise are the ones that don't know everything, but the fools know everything. Even though, yes, ironically, the fools don't know everything. But the problem is they believe they do. So that's one thing I know. It's very important. And then I have, from even myself, because we're talking about honesty, I have to put specific people, whether it be on my team in business or just in my own personal life, who will scrutinize what I'm doing. It will scrutinize how I'm thinking. It scrutinizes everything about me, because that's the way we can improve. And there are so many instances, and there's not enough time to even go into that, because we've seen in society when it is revealed that this person clearly did not have a strong enough accountability group, and whatever their bad habits were or bad character traits were, these things have now been publicized. And that's one of the things when we talk about, you know, current leadership versus future leadership. It can the benefit of having accountability as a leader is so powerful, because it allows you just to make sure that you have people protecting you at the same time. Because when those mistakes come out there, depending on the degree of the mistake, it can totally ruin your reputation, whereas you could have had more accountability on this issue. And now you will have to slowly, if possible, build back your name, because it's all about your name. The accountability is the protection of your name.
I love it.
But that's
okay. Well, we're almost 30 minutes in. I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. Before we get into the portion where we speak about what you do pertaining to healthy lifestyle changes. So very quickly, you know, we've got almost 4 minutes to really get into this accountability. I want to talk about the prospect of leadership as in correlation to rebellion, because what you're saying is, let's say we're talking about parenthood, there's something that your parents are normally teaching you, or you're influencing you to do something that they would like for you to do or to be more like them. But there usually comes a point in a person's life where they begin to rebel, whether it be in a good way or a bad way. They have to rebel in order to become a leader. So very quickly, let's just touch on leadership in correlation with rebellion.
That's touchy, because it is true. It is true, because when it comes down to it, it has to do with what you believe is right. So essentially what you were speaking about is morality, because and many times people become leaders because they don't agree. They don't agree with the paradigm of the family. They don't agree with the paradigm of their society. And they see things another way. And that's an interesting part, because I know that, I mean, there's little ways we can understand this. And I believe that everyone who is an innovative individual, and they have those kind of personalities, has to deal with that kind of struggle. Because I had that, you know, in my life. I just said, you know what, I see this kind of paradigm you're presenting to me as what I'm supposed to become, especially because I come from a traditional African background. So therefore, the only options for occupation for me was either a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, or something that's attached. Oh, accountant, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So for me, those are the expectations that were put out there for me. And I rebelled. I totally rebelled against it. I understood it, but because it wasn't consistent with my morale, what I thought was right for me, and understanding who I was, even though I am happier than if I had gone that route of what was expected of me, I do know that that is the discomfort that we have to fight against, because it comes down to who we are. And I think the whole issue of that rebellion is because if you are understanding more about who you are, it becomes extremely difficult to just accept what is given to you. And it's just an issue where it's that I just hope it's because we are saying, this is what is right to do. This is what I believe is right to do. Because some people have rebelled, but it was just because they wanted to go their own way, and the consequences were unfavorable. But definitely challenging. I believe it just really has to do with understanding yourself, understanding what you believe you're put here to do, and how you can have positive change. And if that is not consistent with what's presented to you, either it might be through your parents or it might be through your educational system. The hardest part about that is separating yourself, but history is painted with many individuals who have done that. I'm not encouraging people to drop out of school, but it just means that certain people did because it wasn't consistent with who they knew they were.
Okay. Well, I certainly want to thank Michael Lismaker for joining us for this this very honest chat about leadership, and I'm sure we're going to have you back on the show talking about leadership. That was our first half of the show. Thank you for that. Now, moving into the second half of the show where we're talking about leadership in terms of health, because you are a healthy lifestyle coach.
That is true.
So we want to talk a little bit about your journey, and we'll probably still touch on a couple of these things that that we touched on in leadership, pertaining to leadership in general, when it comes to health, because in our own experiences, we are rebellious with our health. We have desires. We are influenced by, from the very beginning, by our families of what we choose to eat. We do have to seek improvement and honesty in a few things. So, and we have to have accountability for our current state of health because of how we lead ourselves or how we were led into managing and taking care of ourselves and being knowledgeable or ignorant, either one, either side. So tell us about your journey into becoming a healthy lifestyle coach, and then let's get into how people should become leaders in managing their own health.
When it came to my journey, because of my personality, I always like to see something and see how I can improve it for the better. I was just fascinated by the idea because there seemed to be, over the past decade, there was this movement of, is it more of this green movement, this healthy movement? And I'm very inquisitive, so I remember originally I saw people saying things such as, oh, if you eat this or do this, you know, you can slow down the aging process, you can feel better, do this. And I knew from my own life I was not happy with my current state, with my, at that time, my state of health. And I believe that if it can be improved, then the only thing I can do is just try it and see how I can understand more, educate myself more on this aspect of what is it to be healthy, or how can I have a greater sense of well-being? Because sometimes I'm passionate about business, I'm passionate about meeting new clients, but sometimes I just don't feel positive about myself, just generally speaking. And I noticed that health is really the core of that, especially when it comes to how we are physically, how we are mentally, how we are emotionally, spiritually. These things are the core of it. But for myself, I know it was because of it was a basic curiosity to see what exactly does it mean to improve. So my journey led me to research, led me to studying, led me to try to understand how I can improve myself first in this whole aspect of it. I want to see how my health can get better, and I want to see if it's possible. And it was at my church, they were having like training to help people be medical missionaries. That's someone who focuses on educating communities on how they can understand and prevent many lifestyle problems. So my journey just took me in different avenues where I was able to learn from different people, naturopathic doctors and nurses and those who specialize in alternative medicine, and I got to talk to many professionals in the medical world. And the more I was getting information, the more I wanted to try it out for myself. And I was initially scared, but I wanted to try different things. And when I tried it, I noticed that there was a big change. There was a big change in how I felt about myself. There was a big change about how I operated. There was a big change in my exercise. And I would say every health issue I had at the time just was slowly fading away. And because it was working, I stuck with it. But then I noticed that, yes.
I want you to talk about why you were afraid when you first. I can't imagine you being afraid of all the information.
I hope you don't stop me there. But information can be scary because, I mean, listen, you look at the commercials, we are surrounded by things that are just, it is just appealing. I mean, it looks so good. And advertisers know it works so well because all I have to do is get you to look at the front of the package. And if I can win your attention there, it's fine. But because we're creatures of habit, it's about giving up. I don't want to give up some of the stuff. that I grew fond of. I didn't want to give it that thing up. It was very,
yeah, because
very
mommy's good. Fish stew. That fish stew is really good.
I still try to get the stew in there. I get the stew in there, but it's a very scary thing because that shows how weak we are. But it's more of a psychological issue. I knew that I wasn't gonna die. Because I was at least trying to educate myself first on what exactly does it mean to give the body what it needs, not just what it wants, but because mostly we're thinking about what we want. And then when I tried to educate myself on what I needed, you know, at first it's scary because when you're thinking about losing something, it's just, we don't like to lose things, especially when we're emotionally attached to it. And whether it's a person or food, emotional attachments, usually, they're met with serious resistance when someone says we have to take it away. I mean, I don't want to take away I mean, Krispy Kreme? I mean, what?
Hey, look, cool? I am not giving up my occasional glazed donut. I'm just here to let you know.
I'm not here to tell you. As long as we are educated that this thing is not what we need, then I think we could at least have a good starting point. And at least what I've noticed when I educate people, I never tell them what to give up. I never tell them to take anything out. I usually motivate because it's really scary to see people's responses. In the beginning, I say, well, you're going to have to take this out, and it's usually met with extreme resistance. But what I usually do is I say, well, what we're going to add, whatever this is you're eating right now, we're just going to add this. Oh, we're going to switch it with this. So you're not losing, we're switching. And that is it's a little bit more comfortable for them.
Some people
do a little bit, but I say, no, we're just switching. And I believe that there's some things because we're so ingrained in that. And I understand because, I mean, I mean, McDonald's was, that was my place. I mean, for like 20 years, I loved it to death. I loved it so much that I worked there when I was a teenager. So
right.
I knew about it. I knew how it worked. And the more I was educated about, which I won't talk in detail, because when I did work there, I did find out a lot more about the inner workings of how the food is made. But after a while, I was just focusing so much more on what I was getting, not just what I was giving up. It made it a lot easier. But, of course, initially, you're thinking of taking out. But it's never about what you're taking it out. It's what you're trying to add in to give the body what it needs.
I think that's an excellent definition for sacrifice. I think you've just really summed up an excellent definition for sacrifice. It's not about what's being taken away, but it's about what you're adding. And with that, I think more people would feel more comfortable with the word sacrifice. You know, the two major words that people don't even like to hear are sacrifice and submission. Those are the two F words.
you're dead right. That's right. It's like I'm giving up, you know. I mean, it depends, we talked about this before. Depending on your worldview, you have a reference point. Like some people who are part of certain religions, when you hear sacrifice, you're thinking about an animal or a human being offered on some volcano god or something, or you're put on an altar, and it's like, oh, this is a bloody process. I don't want to sacrifice my pizza. And it gets, you know, but it's like, the whole thing is really good because we can just say you are getting so much more out of this, and let's talk about the stuff you're getting. And it's great because when someone presents something greater, then you look at the stuff that you were holding on to and get rid of it. But the problem is that the object that's greater is not held in view. That's the issue. Usually the people who just say, you got to stop doing this. And mind you, some things you do have to stop. If it's a life-threatening situation, we just got to stop. But in most cases, there's something you just need a perspective shift. You just have to get a paradigm shift where I can hold something in front of you. I mean, if you just had a regular everyday car, I mean, you're putting $4 worth of gas per gallon into this thing every day, and I tell you, listen, I'm gonna give you, this is a brand new car, doesn't need gas at all. In fact, it's solar powered. You know, let's just say it's solar powered, and you know what? If you can charge it, you can charge it yourself, and there's no additional cost. And all I do is I keep talking about that new car, I keep talking like it's the color you want, it's got the functions you want, it's got the steering you want, it's got everything you possibly want. And the more I talk about that, I would assume that you're not going to be so excited about the car you currently have. And that's what I usually do. I focus more on making you even disgusted to think about the other side. But it's a process, because I know we like to hold on because we have an emotional attachment to certain things that are not good for us. And it's not just what we do.
I hear what you're saying, but I'm going to have to disagree with you on a certain level, because when we're talking about food here, we're not talking about just our eyes. We're not talking about, oh, we're going to add the radio, we're going to add the color yellow, we're going to add all these other things. When we're talking about food, we're talking about affecting all of our senses. So it's real easy to say, I'm going to add something to your diet and then say, let's take away barbecue. Because usually when people smell barbecue, when your sense of smell gets affected by those comfort foods or those foods, it is pretty hard to give that up. And I'm speaking from experience.
Like I said, you're absolutely correct. Yeah, no, you're absolutely correct. And that's why I said it's a process. Because I'm not going to say that instantly and it's going to be like, bam. Because like I said, even for me, I don't tell people that I just jumped on this boat like overnight at all. It took at least 3 years, even from where I came, for me to get to where I was. But the whole fundamental is about, can I impress you with something better? That was the idea. Can I give you something better than that? And we can always go back, and people, as many people do, through the process. I usually guide them. So it's as long as the process, it depends on the person. Sometimes the process is slow, sometimes the process is real fast. Or sometimes maybe I'll take you to a nice restaurant. You know, we're supposed to be going somewhere. I know we haven't gone, but we're supposed to be going somewhere soon. And I'll take you somewhere, and I'll show you how they make food here. And I'll have you try a few things. And sometimes people are impressed right away, and sometimes it takes longer. And it's about our palate as well, because sometimes, you know, we know there's some things that are triggers, especially based on our culture. There's certain triggers we have. Yeah. And we're like, if I smell that, I'm not gonna be well.
Yeah.
But because we are creatures of habit, we can change. We can change. The bad habits are things that are put into us, but we can also put good habits into us as well. I mean, I remember when I just tried practicing more of a healthy lifestyle. And I remember one time I even went to Burger King. You know, I went to Burger King because there was nothing open. I was helping a friend, and I said, "All right, let me just grab." I said, "All right, let me try to be more on the health side and get a fish sandwich." So I had just been changing my diet, and it was only about a few months. But when I went back and I tried to eat that, literally, even though it smelled okay, it literally made me sick. And that was just for me, and I'm not saying it works for everybody. But the fact is that introducing new things does change you. It changes you on a cellular level as well. So it introduces all these things, which helps to improve the system given the food that's given. But the whole idea is that the fact that it can change, your palate can change, your senses can be affected. Now you can smell new things and now actually habitually be fond of those things. I found that many things that I used to like, I could smell them and just I wouldn't have any interest. But that's something that I know that just does take time. That's why I say it is a process. It is a process. It can't be instant. But some people, they can get it quickly. Some people, it just takes part of educating yourself again about what the body is.
All right. Well, now let's just get into plant-based living. I should have asked this at the top of this second half of the show, because that's what most people are really interested in finding out what it is. When they hear the words plant-based diet, they really do believe that they're going to be outside eating grass or chewing on plants for the rest of their lives. They're not aware that a healthy lifestyle or plant-based eating is actually filled with very yummy, very scrumptious food. Just like when you hear raw food, you're going to eat raw food, they start thinking that you're going to have to eat raw meat, instead of saying, no, you do know that apples and oranges and bananas are raw food. We just want to integrate plant-based eating and raw food into your diet to help improve so that you can become the leader in your health. So talk about concepts of plant-based eating so that people can have a better understanding of what that is.
When it comes to plant-based eating, well, the misconception is that, yes, it does seem like it's we are joining the rabbit community and we are just having our lot of cabbage all day, and if might add a carrot in there, but I don't know where these assumptions come from, but that's what I usually have seen. Those are usually the objections that I have found when I'm speaking in different places or doing seminars. People say, I'm not trying to eat like a rabbit. I can't. That's not my life. And I said, well, let's look at it from this perspective. Our cultures, when it comes down to where we came from, there was no category of organic food. You didn't have a special aisle, and you didn't have that place in the back of a supermarket that had all the special organic products. Everything was just organic. And when it comes down to a plant-based diet, all we're really talking about, because I don't like the other labels because they have other implications on it, and they change so much, like veganism and vegetarianism, plant-based diet, it just means that you are just incorporating, just fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, grains, all of these things. And there's a creative way you can have them. There's many ways you can have them. And anyone could just look it up, and you can find all sorts of dishes you can make. And it depends on what you like. And they have different foods based on your taste. You want something sweet, or you want something, maybe you can make your own cakes, you can make your own pies. I mean, you can make your own, for people who are used to the things that they're very fixed on, and you can even make alternatives just to help you psychologically transition. There's always a way to have it. So when I look at a plant-based diet, you're really just eating real food. And most of the stuff that's in stores is not real food. It's cleverly presented as food. I think I posted this on my Facebook one time. I said, I believe that we're really just eating clever combinations of possibly corn, but it's not really food. These are some clever chemicals put together and some things that we can't pronounce. But real food is so beneficial for the body. And yes, just eating, just making an amazing smoothie. I mean, people could find me on Facebook and I have pictures of stuff I make just in my own kitchen. From smoothies to breads to, I mean, I make breads that are sweeter than much of the stuff that's in stores. But it's amazing that all this stuff comes from the earth, so it's good for our body. So the whole goal is functioning in a way that helps us focus on what we need first, and then we can get excited about our palate and add a little kick to it.
Nice. Okay, so, I mean, bottom line, to my listeners, plant-based diet, plant-based eating is not necessarily chewing on leaves and grass. It is just, as Michael so eloquently put it, integrating more fruits, veggies, nuts, grains, and raw foods into your diet in order to improve your health. So, I mean, and well, technically, basil is a plant, so we will be chewing on some sort of plant at some point because I like fresh basil.
I'm going to put that. You can chew on leaves all you want, but I didn't tell you to do it. But it's plant based. It's not like we're eating flowers, but it's really, you'd be surprised. There's so many things that are in the earth that's great for us. And they're put there to be great, but rather than having so much processed sugar and things of that nature, we could just have natural things that are sweet and super sweet. I mean, there's raw agave nectar. I saw something in the store the other day. They have like coconut nectar, and that thing is super sweet, even for people like me. Because I'm not gonna lie, I have a mighty sweet tooth, so I don't go for the processed sugar. I mean, it's mighty, but. I go towards, dates, molasses, something like that. You can always have something, because I believe that everything that we need was put in there, but the amazing part of it actually tastes good. It's something that tastes good. So it's like these things were put there not just for us to just say, oh, I guess I got to eat That again. The fact that it can actually taste good shows that these things can be combined together. But it's just the fact that the perspective is off. We're thinking more about what tastes good first, what is good second. And we should be thinking what is good first, then let's focus on how we can get a something that can be taken and is pleasing to the palate as well. And not, and mind you, not everything will be pleasing based on what the body needs. But you know, that's something we have to deal with. But that's where I think we have to focus on, because it's really that easy. There's so many websites people can go on. They can even go on mine, the one I have from at least the work I do with Educating on Health, which is the myevaproject.com. And
yes,
I put recipes there. I can make some stuff. I have some stuff. I got smoothies. I got some strawberry bars. You can make stuff that is amazing.
Well, see, I wouldn't know what you can make, although I should know what you can make. Because I have yet to taste any of the stuff that you bake. You give it to your friends, your other friends, but you have yet to bring, other than the granola, but I'm talking about strawberry bars and, wait, you know what? Actually, I think I did have pancakes.
In defense of the strawberry bars, the problem is it's just a little hard for it to leave the kitchen after I make it. So I'm working on that, you know, pray for me. I'm trying to make it work. But as long as it can be done. I just have to work on it getting out of the kitchen after I finish making it, because it is really, really good. But at the same time, yeah, I don't mind. I take that. I mean, that's more part of the accountability. I will take it and say, well, I'll hook you up. I will hook you up.
All right, then I'm waiting for the hookup. If my listeners are listening, he said he's going to hook a sister up. So I am waiting for the hookup when it comes to these things. That's all right. You'll be in New York soon enough, and I'm going to play back this very small portion of the recording that says that you're going to hook me up, and I'm going to keep playing that and say, okay, please go into the kitchen and hook me up.
I'm okay with that. I don't mind. I don't mind saying thank you. Thank you so much. I will get to it. I have no problem with that. Anytime, well, definitely try to do it.
Okay. All right. So we've had great conversations about leadership, and normally we usually get a little more rowdy and a lot more laughing goes on when we have a conversation. We were pretty tame this evening.
Yeah.
But we can get into it now, because we've already talked about what you do for health and what people need to add in. So people, plants, fruits, nuts, grains. Now let's get into it.
What do we need to get into?
Well, the same subject when we talked about leadership.
Okay.
Excuse me. We can talk about being able to become a better leader for your health. And the same elements that we discussed at the top of the show are the same elements that need to be used when it comes to pulling your health together.
What we didn't touch on was the element of
failure or failing when it comes to becoming a leader. We never got into that.
I don't know why you're excited about that part. I don't know, I'm excited about that. It's funny that I'm actually excited. I'll be honest, Toya, I'm excited about this now more than ever, only because more than ever I have relied on my accountability group. I mean, I have such a powerful circle. I have such a powerful group of friends around me, and the best part about it when it comes to failure is I don't have to fall back and just hit the floor by myself. I have people around me that are just saying, all right, you tried, you did this thing, let's see how we can help you. And I think that's one of the best parts about it, because it does feel scary. I know people, I talk to people about finding their passion. I do seminars about how you can understand how are you built? What is your personality? Who are you? What do you want to do? Why aren't you doing it? Or maybe there are certain factors that are limiting you, like finances or education. Why aren't you starting? Why aren't you educating yourself? Why aren't you doing anything? And because we're terrified of failure. And it's like, we know, and it's so funny, many people are so, they come off as so educated on how things don't work. Like, we talk a lot about how things won't work in our life. Like, we're so filled with these thoughts, yet we're not even thinking about, well, you know, can this work? I think it can work. It's worked for other people. But we are champions of impossible. That's just like, that is the common thing I see. And, it is risk. Everything is risk. But the problem is, it's like we want this kind of perfect track record to say, I never failed. I never went out there, and so I have my security. But many find out too late that the reality is that you already failed. You already failed when you didn't do it. You didn't even try to do it. I'm full, and you know where I am right now, my life. And yeah. I'm all over the place. I'm traveling. I see opportunities. I'm in Idaho, for crying out loud. I'm in Idaho right now. I used to live in New York. I'm in Idaho, and all my New York friends are like, "What are you doing?" And I said, listen, I'm that kind of guy. And I said, you may not understand me. You may not appreciate what I do. You may not support what I do. But one thing that everyone has to know about me is that I'm always honest. And when I see what I want and when I know what I want and I see that what I know what I want is available, I said, I don't care where it is in this planet. I'll have to go for it. And if I fail on that problem, If I fail in that aspect, well, I get the awesome experience of telling people, yeah, actually I tried that. It actually didn't work, but I tried it. And I don't have to, for me, my own self, it gives me a comfort not worrying myself on the what could have been or what if I did that. And so I've become more comfortable in this idea of it's because it's a fail. The word fail just has this negative connotation to it. It's like, oh my gosh, you failed, so everybody thinks it's over. And I just think I just learned something. I mean, I'm always learning. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm letting in so many small ways. I'm letting people down, and I'm improving myself because if I knew everything, and then what's the sense of improving? If I was doing everything perfectly, what's the sense of me improving anymore? I don't know everything. I can't do all things. So it's not going to happen.
You're on your way to pushing yourself into leadership, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's part of the process. It's the failure is part of the process. But I've actually grown to embrace it so much more, and at least with a good accountability group. I love it even more because those are people who think like I do and understand that aspect, and they're not scared. I think the cowardice aspect is what is the issue I have. And I know that there are trials. I know that they are unfavorable and sometimes even life-threatening circumstances. Sometimes they are. But it comes down to it with proper discernment. You don't know everything. So the worst thing you can do is not try. You know, there's a saying, you know, many people, they try and they fail, but what's worse is failing to try. So I tried.
I tried.
You were like, did you do that? I did that too. Yep, did that too. Yep, did that one too. Well, what about it? Yeah,
I love it. So yeah. Now when they ask, how did you do so many things? You're just going to say, well, nothing beats a failure but a try. So I just tried everything until I found what I wanted.
You got to find it. It's an event. It's an adventure, but it's better than the misery of never trying. And I believe many people are in that misery, and they are not doing anything, and because they're too busy submitted to that you know, quote unquote ghost of fear, and you're already miserable. So why don't you just do it anyway? So because all the issue of job security and. I remember I put out my story when I lost my job. I had a full-time job working for a great company in New York, and that was in 2009. I remember it was January 5th, 2009. Boom, fired. And so that concept of job security was right out the window. So that whole idea let me know that this thing when we talk about security is not security. It's just an illusion. So if I'm going to just be out there, why don't I at least enjoy what I am doing? and that I find a personal reward in what I'm doing. I see the influence, I see the impact with people. I see how it's making people better, getting them to think how I think if I believe that I'm actually spreading a positive message. I mean, to see someone's life change for the better and you are actively engaged in this responsibility of improving yourself and shaping minds and admitting you're wrong and you know, and trying to make sure that you're doing your best to serve passionately. I mean, and seeing people just say, you have changed my life. I wouldn't give that up. I can't give that up. So
yes.
And that's why it's part of the love of it, the desire, and that's why the desire is then fueled even more.
Right. Right,
failing will come, but the problem is they look at it like two separate roads.
Mm-hmm.
Either I fail or I succeed. I'm like, no, it's just one road. You will fail until you succeed. Until you get it, you won't get it.
Right,
so
you are the unsuspecting leader now. At that point, that when you didn't realize that your entire and complete journey kind of influenced someone else, you have become the unsuspecting leader.
I want to inspire people to fail.
You know what?
You know, you're going to see my seminar. It's going to be how to fail and do it right. You know, I'm telling you, watch. People think it's crazy. Watch. You'll see my failing seminar, and people will be flooded in there. You know?
Okay.
You know that guy that just pointing at people? You can do great. I'm like, nah, you can fail. But
you know, as long as I get to cover the event, you know, that – you got a date. I'm going to cover that event just to see how many people come flooding in.
I don't know how many will come in, but, you know, I am. They might not come in. They might be a little timid, but I'll get them in there.
All right. Well, listen, we want to thank Michael Smicker for being a guest on our show tonight, discussing the topic of leadership. If you're just listening in or if you have been listening in, you know that we're talking about leadership for the month of June, which is the month for Father's Day, and we are celebrating and honoring our men. And along with that topic, we talked about eating healthy, becoming a leader in your healthy lifestyle. We didn't get a chance to talk about everything with his photography and all the many talents that Michael has, but we are so glad that he joined us. I'm sure we're going to hear from him again. But as of tonight, we do just want to say thank you. Thank you all for your constant, continued support of our show, and we look forward to talking with you again next week as we talk with Bill Roddy of the Osiris Organization. He is the author of the book Manhood from the Hood. I read this book. It is definitely inspirational. I cannot wait to interview him. You cannot wait to listen to the interview either, I bet. So we'll see you again next week. We love you. You know that we're a show about love, beauty, wedding, and marriage fun along with family. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.